Our governor calls Utah the startup capital of the world. And it tracks. We've got a fast-growing, well-educated population and a buzzing economy. And just last week, Utah unveiled the Startup State Initiative, a resource portal for entrepreneurs. From step-by-step guides to a business plan generator, startup.utah.gov is now the first stop for starting or growing a business here. That's startup.utah.gov. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. Utah officials are putting a lot of blame on social media for the follies of our society. From writing laws to limit our access to social media apps, to giving parents tips on how to talk to their kids about screen time, fighting with TikTok is what's hot right now. But as the data story often goes, is all this finger-pointing causation or correlation? And stick around, because right after, CityCast content director Andrea Salenzi will be joining us for a conversation sponsored by Salt Lake Community College. It's Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm Ali Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Amy Winder Newton, some of our listeners might know you as our Salt Lake County Council member, but you are here today as the director of Utah's Office of Families. Governor Spencer Cox and your office have made combating the effects of social media on kids a priority. Certainly a big national conversation right now. But I kind of have to start by asking you for some context, because out of all the issues that Utah kids are dealing with right now, almost a quarter of people experiencing homelessness in Utah are under 18, 10% of Salt Lake kids are food insecure. Why is this topping the list of priorities?
Well, for Governor Cox, this isn't the only top priority. He's got a lot of them, and his budget reflected that, with housing and homelessness being at the top of that. So when we look, though, at mental health of children, social media does top the list. It's one of the things that we are the most concerned about. As we've looked at the research, we know that social media is making kids nationally and even internationally feel lonelier than ever before. And so this is something we're incredibly concerned about. The Office of Families looks at proactive policy to better strengthen families and look at ways that we can basically prevent some of the social service issues that we have later on when we don't do something. And that's why we're tackling this. That's why the governor's been at the forefront of this issue.
What are some of those data points?
Well, just in Utah, we know that 53% of our high school girls say that they felt persistently sad or hopeless for 2 weeks or more. That's concerning for us.
I get it.
Yeah. When you look at the data from when social media became popular, 2009, 2010, and mental health issues, you can see it's almost like a hockey stick. Like, the data just goes along. And then once social media takes off, it just rises in an incredibly fast rate. 18% of our Utah youth seriously considered suicide in the past year. And 36% got at least 8 hours of sleep at night. We believe social media is a big piece of that. Staying up late doesn't help with their educational and learning, but it also affects mental health when you don't get enough sleep. So there's, when our U.S. Surgeon General comes out and says social media is a huge issue for youth mental health and we need to be concerned, we particularly take note. But we're really proud that Utah was the state leading the way on this issue, even before the Surgeon General started speaking out about this.
I mean, it sounds like that data is very much timed with the invention of social media or the popularity of social media. But we don't necessarily know that that's causation, right? That's necessarily correlation. How do we know?
Yeah, it's hard to know, because when you're tracking over time, like, you have to start a study and then have a long-term study in order to really see outcomes related to this. But we've got enough researchers throughout the nation that are tracking this and we are certain social media is causing mental health. Probably the biggest reason that we know is when we ask kids in high school, do you believe that social media is negatively impacting mental health? You will get at least 50% of the kids raise their hand and say yes. So when you have kids saying that, yes, it's harming their social, their mental health, we know that this is a factor. So yeah, the data points, it's interesting. We have people who sometimes say, well, you know, it could correlate with when the economy is, or school shootings or all these other things, but it's correlation even throughout the world. We have kids in Australia who in studies have said that social media is the greatest cause of mental health concerns. So this isn't just Utah. It's not just the United States. This is worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, because if you're a Utah kid, you're looking around, there are a lot of things that can make you feel hopeless, especially as a young woman. Like, even just the climate crisis, like the shrinking Great Salt Lake, like there's so much anxiety that young people take on because they know they're walking into a future that right now is kind of just being created for them, maybe a little bit less without their hand. I know, you know, we've seen some ugly data around our LGBTQIA youth and how they feel and bullying. Like, there's a lot on the table here.
And there's a lot of things to that. I mean, you look at, we find especially girls as they're getting ready to go through puberty are especially vulnerable. And a lot of that has to do with the body image piece. I mean, how many of our young people are now trained that they have to have a filter on their pictures in order to like the way that they look? And they don't like their image in a regular mirror. That's concerning. When you get fed by algorithms dangerous information about eating disorders or even things that aggravate depression, you know, we've got lawsuits from parents who are suing TikTok and other platforms because of their child's suicide. So, I mean, there's lots of factors that are going into it. But we do believe that kids, if they can put away their devices, have more in-person and human connection, they will be happier. And we see that.
Mother's Day is on the horizon, and the good news is that you can find everything you need at Harmon's. Whether it's a little something to brighten Mom's Day or a memorable spread, here are a few ideas. For breakfast, try Harmon's house-baked cinnamon rolls with freshly squeezed orange juice and a package of fresh-cut strawberries. If you're spicing it up with Bloody Marys, don't forget that Harmon's has an olive bar with over 12 different varieties. Now, flowers are the perennial favorite, and you can order online or pop by the store last minute, shop succulents, potted plants, and elaborate arrangements. May's flower of the month is the hydrangea. Very appropriate. Hydrangeas are fragrant and elegant. And if sweets are in order, Harmon's has added raspberry to their selection of brownie flavors. Find all mom's favorites at your local Harmon's or order online at harmonsgrocery.com. Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita, a delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. Mother's Day is on the horizon, and the good news is that you can find everything you need at Harmon's. Whether it's a little something to brighten Mom's Day or a memorable spread, here are a few ideas. For breakfast, try Harmon's house-baked cinnamon rolls with freshly squeezed orange juice and a package of fresh-cut strawberries. If you're spicing it up with Bloody Marys, don't forget that Harmon's has an olive bar with over 12 different varieties. Now, flowers are the perennial favorite, and you can order online or pop by the store last minute, shop succulents, potted plants, and elaborate arrangements. May's flower of the month is the hydrangea, very appropriate. hydrangeas are fragrant and elegant. And if sweets are in order, Harmons has added raspberry to their selection of brownie flavors. Find all mom's favorites at your local Harmons or order online at harmonsgrocery.com. Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita, a delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmons or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. I want to ask you about how difficult it is to navigate this, because social media opens up all these doors that are sort of unregulated. But we also do have data that shows that online is where a lot of young people find community, whether that's via like a shared identity or a favorite author. And when I think something we think about a lot on this show is like the fact that loneliness is an epidemic in this country. How do you balance like enough intervention with so much intervention that it undermines the very goal of helping kids feel less isolated?
Well, what also data shows is that when kids get in-person interaction with people, they do much better. It's a much better connection for them than online. Sometimes these kids are communicating with people that they think are other kids, and they're actually adults who are grooming them, and it's causing other issues. So we don't believe social media is safe for kids as a place to go and find community. We believe in-person connection is where kids can best find that community. I want to read to you the Surgeon General's advisory that he said this last year. This is the U.S. Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy. He said, there is growing evidence that social media use is associated with harm to young people's mental health. We are in the middle of a national youth mental health crisis, and I am concerned that social media is an important driver of that crisis, one that we must urgently address. He said, age 13, way too young for kids to be on social media, that parents should band together with other parents and decide if 16, 17, 18, if an older age is right for their child. And so, you know, we take our information from our health professionals seriously when they talk about this. You know, they're not just flying by the seat of their pants when they're coming up with this stuff. So those are things that we're concerned about. And because of that, the state's been able to pass some legislation to help rein in social media companies, provide some more tools for parents and children. And so the 2024 bills that just came out, there's two of them. They repealed and replaced last year's laws, but they'll basically require social media companies to enact a strict age assurance process, include default privacy settings, disable addictive features, offer tools for parents to help set time limits and see connected accounts when the child gives permission, and then not collect or sell certain data on minors without parental consent. So far, it's just kind of been a free-for-all for these companies. And We even when we've surveyed Utah parents, we have 88% who believe it's detrimental to their kids, that social media is detrimental. So we're doing what we can.
One of the reasons that those laws had to be rewritten targeting social media is because lawsuits were challenging their constitutionality. Do you all feel that that's now been fully put to bed? It feels like we're still amidst it.
Yeah, I mean, we knew we'd get sued at some point. Last year, when we developed the laws, it was kind of throw everything at the wall and see, you know, what sticks. We expected more of the social media companies to come in and have discussions, and that didn't happen. And so they went in, they passed with a delayed implementation date. And this year, it gave us a chance to go back and really refine. And it was helpful, actually, to have those lawsuits to look at as we were developing these laws to ensure that they were going to be constitutional. So I think these are going to do much better. We expect that, you know, there still could be lawsuits at play, but we feel really good about them. So, and it's been interesting to watch all the other states who have followed Utah's lead on this too. So
yeah,
ultimately we just want to protect kids. In fact, it's such a nonpartisan issue or a bipartisan issue. When President Biden came and visited Utah, one of the first things he said to the governor was, "Hey, congratulations on getting your social media laws passed. That's something I'm still working on." So there's definite, both sides of the aisle have interest in this, both in our state and nationally. And we're glad to see that.
I'm interested to hear you bring up that this is a bipartisan issue, because when I think of something else that is a bipartisan issue, it's how adults behave online. Like, what do you think is a model of good behavior online? Because whether a person or a resource, because as someone in media, like I follow a lot of our state leaders on Twitter and other avenues. And I do feel like sometimes the people who are talking out of one side of their mouth about this movement really like to pick fights or punch down online themselves. So like, how much do we all, need to take personal responsibility for how we act?
Yeah, well, I totally agree with you on that. We all need to take personal responsibility. This campaign and these laws are geared specifically for children. But you're right, as adults, we are setting the example for our kids. And when we are disrespectful to people online, we're being terrible examples. It's one of the things that the governor's Disagree Better campaign that he's doing with his role as the chair of the National Governors Association. That's one of the things that we're talking about is we've got it. We can disagree on issues. We can be on two different ends of the spectrum as far as an issue is concerned. But we've got to be respectful of people. We've got to treat them like human beings. And you can have healthy debate and dialogue without getting into name calling and really devaluing somebody's existence. And so I agree with you. We got to do better.
Do you have specific advice on how parents should be talking about social media with their kids? I don't even know where I'd start if I had a kid.
Well, let me tell you just a few tips that we have for parents. So the first one is to create a family media plan. So we want families to get together, decide what's appropriate in your household, what media will be used, how it will be used, and establish kind of a plan overall. Because if kids know ahead of time that these are the family standards, then that's a better place to start. The other one is modeling social media behavior, responsible social media behavior, like you mentioned, making sure that we can do better on putting our phones away. Our own governor has a 17-year-old daughter and he doesn't allow her on social media. And I asked her about it. I said, "Is this hard?" And in high school, and she said, "You know, at first it really was. Like I struggled with that." But she said, "Now I'm just kind of known as the kid who doesn't have social media and it's been okay." And then there's tips if you're trying to wean your child off social media. So checking phones in at night. We used to do that when we had teenagers, is we'd have them come into our bedroom and every night they'd have to plug their phones into our room so that they could get a break from their phone and go to bed and hopefully sleep. And then just helping kids feel what it feels like to have that in-person connection just helps kids realize that they get better dopamine hits with those in-person connections than they do just looking online and getting into that endless scroll.
Okay, I do have to say, Amy, if I was Governor Cox's daughter and he was like, "You can't be online," I would be like, "Dad, you are chronically online." Like, you have two different Twitters. And I feel like every time I log on, the most recent tweet I have is from the governor. Like, he himself, I feel like, has like talked about how much he engages.
But he's an adult. And I think that's the point is we can't handle it as adults, right? Like, we're struggling with social media. And you have kids whose brains aren't fully developed, and we're going to hand them a phone where there's predators that can go after them, where they could have constant bullying. I mean, kids get bullied at school, and it used to be it just was when you were there at school. Now it's 24/7. I mean, it's just there's so many things that kids are not able to handle. The algorithms that these social media companies put forward and some of the stuff that's given and sent through their feeds, like these kids just don't have the maturity or their brains aren't developed to be able to handle this. We're hoping parents will take note and that they'll check out our website and see some of the data and some of the tips and the things that they can use to help them.
Well, my last question for you is kind of just around measuring success. Like, you know, you mentioned that Utah is one of the first states to be really taking steps to address social media harms. Some of the strongest laws in the nation we've passed. But there isn't much of a playbook. So how do you measure success? Like, if the outcome we're battling is kids are more sad, how do we measure that they're less sad?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We have, through our Department of Health and Human Services, something called the SHARP survey. And it's something that we do every year where we are able to survey kids in certain grades. It's anonymous and it's confidential, and they're able to give really good information about how they're feeling or things that they're involved in or whatever. And it's a good indicator for us to be able to see how their lives are impacted by the things that are happening to them and what's being impacted. And so, you know, we've had some school districts not want to have the SHARP survey, or some parents have pushed back. It's awesome. We've got to keep doing it. And we appreciate those who are recognizing that this data is really helpful in informing us on policy and on things that we need to be looking at for our kids.
Why are some parents pushing back?
I don't know. There are specific reasons. Some worry that that we're giving them ideas, I guess, if we're asking questions about it, whether they're LGBTQ or, you know, if they are depressed, they're worried about putting ideas in their head. I think that's a very small population of our parents. So anyway, we think it's good for us to know what's happening in a kid's mind here in Utah and why they have struggles and what we can do to help.
Yeah. Kids are smart.
Yeah, they are.
Amy Winder Newton, Director of the Utah Office of Families. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Before we go, enjoy this segment sponsored by Salt Lake Community College. It's some perspective from a student, and it might inspire you to further your education.
Hey, I'm CityCast Content Director Andreas Lindsay here with Joyce Wambui. She's a Salt Lake Community College student who will be graduating this spring, which she's done while working and while serving as student body president. Welcome to the show, Joyce.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Joyce, when you were a freshman at Cottonwood High, you learned about this program called PACE that's offered at SLCC, or SLCC. What is PACE and how did it get you thinking about college?
Yeah, PACE is a scholarship program that helps low-income students and first-generation students access college. Students get a full ride here at the college, as well as advising and or you know, like navigating college.
A full ride, that's huge. Why did it seem right for you?
Initially, college wasn't always something that I wanted to pursue. I just thought that college wasn't always for me. But then PACE really helped, you know, shift that mindset and shows that, you know, education truly is important and I can be whatever I want with the support of with education.
So PACE is a program that connects with you when you're in high school. So they set you up with this advisor. Did you feel ready for college when it was time?
Mm-hmm. I felt very, very ready, especially when they hooked me up with the Summer Bridge program. That's a program where it's taken in the summer, and that really helped me a lot because I was able to just like walk around campus, you know, learn different offices, learn what different buildings were. Through that, I also got a free laptop and I didn't have to buy one at all. Then you also get a stipend for getting good grades.
So what has your experience been at SLCC?
It's been really, really great so far. I'm in my second year. I'm ready to graduate. I'm also currently the student body president. So I went from not wanting to go to college and becoming the student body president, advocating for so many students, just being able to be a resource for other students as well. You know, I have younger siblings. And so when I think about them coming to college and needing that big sister, like it's what drives me to do what I do right now.
So what are the professors like?
The professors are amazing. I mean, when I started like my first class, I was nervous, you know, and my professor was just so welcoming and so nice. And our class sizes are not as huge. We have like around like 90 students in, you know, in every class. And that allows for professors to create a really great connection with students. And, you know, compared to like a larger university with 200 students, like the professors wouldn't take the time to learn all their names. But here at SLCC, they do.
So with an average class size of 19 students, do you feel like that made a difference for you these past 2 years?
It did. It did a lot. I feel like I've been able to create connections, not just with the professor, but with other students as well. I've made a lot of friends.
Joyce, your mom is also a student now at SLCC. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
So this happened last year's commencement, graduation. And so she was inspired by that. And she was also inspired when she saw me continuing school. She is a single mom. She didn't have enough time to, you know, pursue education, but seeing that it's possible for her to do so. And I've also helped and supported her a lot with, like, you know, some of her responsibilities. And so that allows her to attend college too.
Do you ever do homework together?
Yeah, we do. It's so much fun.
I feel like I would focus better if I could do my homework with my mom.
She'd be like, focus, focus. You know, she'd be like, you need to focus because you're distracting me too. And I want to get my stuff done.
So graduation is coming up this spring. What's next for you?
I will be getting my associates in business. And then I am going to Westminster University.
What's it going to feel like to graduate?
Lots of emotions, for sure. I feel like the friends that I've made here and just so many connections, I feel like there'll be a lot of people there supporting me. I will be giving a speech too. So I definitely will be nervous getting on stage, but hopefully I won't cry as I'm giving the speech, you know, because like my experience at SLIC has just been so, so great.
What's your speech like?
Great question. My topic is going to be on the question why. And I feel like it's a broad question, but then it's very important when thinking of, like, you know, the things you're doing, like, why are you here at the college? Why are you in the audience today graduating? What are you doing all this for?
What's your why? Why did you do all this?
It's a lot of them. But I feel the first and most important why for me is my family. I want to be able to support my family, you know, and just land a good job where my mom doesn't have to stress anymore. So that's one of my whys.
Joyce Wambui, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
And again, check out what Salt Lake Community College can do for your career at slcc.edu. That's slcc.edu. We'll have that link for you in our show notes as well.
All right, one last thing. I have a quick correction corner for you. During yesterday's episode on the scandalous texts surrounding Fair Park and Major League Baseball, I mixed up a policy. That Fair Park District Governing Board will still exist even if the Larry H. Miller Company doesn't sign a deal with the MLB. So whether or not we get baseball, the land grab deal is done. Okay, that is all for us today, for real, on CityCast Salt Lake. Thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city. Bye.